Brother Eric John Phelps, 24/7 World Radio. Welcome to the broadcast today on this Sunday, May 26, 2024. And this broadcast will be on the topic of Jonathan Pollard and how the Jesuits betrayed him and sent him to prison for 30 years, only to be released a few years ago and presently living in the nation of Israel. This is a sordid cast of characters. It is the same papal octopus that killed Danny Castellaro, that killed Gary Webb, author of Dark Alliance, and it's the same Jesuit Knight of Malta papal international papal intelligence community that works together. This includes the present Emergency War Powers Military Government of the United States, as created in 1933 with the Emergency Banking Relief Act, coupled with Proclamations 2039-2040, and ultimately, then the establishment of the nation of Israel and given a government in Israel that would be loyal to the Roman papacy and subject to, ultimately, the Emergency War Powers Military Government in the United States, also subject to the papacy. And to put these things together, I listened to a special presentation sent by one of my supporters and advisors, Brother John, and I listened to both of these audios provided by Dr. Bob, and this audio is titled, EP45 and EP46. So, I recommend you listen to those, and I'm going to give you the inner workings of how this Jesuit-controlled international intelligence community works. It is one. It is united. There are individuals within various intelligence services that are true patriots, that if they become too influential, they are removed or assassinated. Like Eric Tim in the CIA and like Desmond Fitzgerald in the CIA, when they got too close to prove that James Jesus Angleton was really the mole in the CIA and that he was working with the KGB with Anatoly Galitzin. And I will give you the quotation for that out of Anthony K. Brown's great work, Treason in the Blood, concerning Kim Philby. So, we're going to start out here with some of the basic. Now, I want to go back and give you some basic history. The Reformation takes place in 1517. Martin Luther starts it with his nailing of the 95 Theses on All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany, East Germany. That begins the Protestant Reformation. A few years later, the Jesuit order will be founded. It's a revival of the Knights Templars. Its purpose, to destroy the Protestant Reformation, to capture Jerusalem, take it from the Muslims, the twofold purpose of the Jesuit order, and then to ultimately bring the world to a universal worship of the final Pope of Rome, to be slain with a sword, Revelation 13:14, to rise from the dead, and then to be the Antichrist, the beast of Revelation 13, the Antichrist of 1 John chapter 4, chapter 2. It's the mystery of iniquity. So Satan's kingdom is not divided. Satan is the god of this world, 2 Corinthians 4:4. And he runs this world through Rome. He runs his world government through men that he controls, highly demon-possessed men at the top that are loyal to the great demon-possessed man at the top, the Pope of Rome, as he's overseen by the Jesuit Superior General, who is Arturo Sosa today. So, Pope Francis, a Jesuit, is subject to his Jesuit master, the Black Pope, the Jesuit Superior General. Underneath these two men are all the secret societies, all the Roman hierarchy, all the knighthoods, ultimately subject to Satan through his international military order of the Society of Jesus that knows no rival, knows no equal in power. So, to begin with, for continuing, the Protestant Reformation prospers. As a result of the Protestant Reformation, the Bible is put in the hands of the common man with his common language, particularly English and German. So the Jesuits have set out particularly to destroy the Reformation in Germany and England, which they have essentially done. As Roman Catholic Italian Al Pacino stated in his movie, when he played the part of Satan, he said, "Who can deny that the entire 20th century was all mine, all of it?" And that's in the movie called The Devil's Advocate. Well, the Jesuits are the great promoters of the movies in Hollywood, and they use certain upfront court Jews, but the Jesuits are the masters of Hollywood. And it's a place of propaganda and also of telling what they have done, what they are doing, and what they shall do. So we have the 20th century. And during the 20th century, we have this most notorious, horrible bloodbath that I call the Second 30 Years' War. The Second 30 Years' War, the first one being from 1618 to 1648, when the Jesuits sought to destroy the Reformation out of Europe, and particularly Germany. Germany was decimated. It lost between one-third and one-half of its population because of the 30 Years' War. But the job wasn't quite finished, so the second 30 Years' War was planned, and that would be from 1914 to 1945. That would include World War I, the Spanish Civil War, the Bolshevik Revolution, and World War II, among others. It's during this 30-year period that the Jesuits would essentially crush the Reformation in Europe, crush the Jewish presence in the Pale of Settlement, and ultimately provide the foundation for the establishment of the nation of Israel, which in the eyes of the Jesuits, who are the revived Knights Templars, Israel to them is nothing more than the revived Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem, in which they can build a third Hebrew temple for the benefit of themselves and the Pope of Rome of their making. So, we need to go back a little bit towards the beginning of the 20th century, when the Jesuits were truly emerging as the power in America. They had carried out the War Between the States from 1861 to 65. Their Yankee Union Army that was communist, because remember they had some 10 foreign communists that took the ranks of general in the Yankee Union Army. It was Karl Marx, who was the overseas correspondent of Horace Greeley, the owner of the New York Tribune, who said that the American Civil War was a communist revolution, particularly on the part of the North in its attack into the South in the historic white and Baptist Protestant South, that at the time was gradually emancipating the blacks and returning them to Africa into a place that had been purchased called Liberia. So slavery was beginning to be ended gradually, as the white Protestants sought to do it, especially Francis Scott Key, who was the head of the American Colonization Society, to bring the American blacks freed blacks to the most beautiful section of Africa, which at the time was Liberia, that had been purchased from tribal chiefs by white Protestants and Baptists in this country. So the purpose of the war was not to free the slaves. The purpose of the war on the part of the South was to resist this tyranny, this centralization of power that was taking place in District of Columbia, District of Catholics. But they failed. And so as a result of that failure, the Jesuits took control completely of District of Columbia. And they would take control of the Democratic Party. They would take control of the Republican Party. There were still some preachers that denounced the Jesuits and told of their power and their quest to destroy the white Protestant Baptist Federal Republic of the United States and on its ruins to make an empire. Well, after the war between the states, they began to build their empire. After they had decimated the South, destroyed many cities, they turned and they began the Indian Wars, the Wars of the Great Plains. From 1865 to 1890, that would end at Wounded Knee, that disgrace of Wounded Knee, where the Indian nations would be consigned to reservations. They would no longer be deemed to be sovereign nations, thanks to the radical Red Republicans in 1871. Refused to acknowledge them as nations by which they could make treaties with them anymore, and so you have this horrible, terrible War of the Great Plains against the Indian nations. And while at the same time you have the building of these huge cartel capitalist families, and they're spoken of in certain irrefutable works called The Robber Barons, and another one called Real Lace, America's Irish Rich, by a Roman Catholic author. And so you have this building of these railway monopolies with Vanderbilt and the steel monopolies with J.P. Morgan and oil monopolies with Rockefeller. These are the robber barons, and not to mention, of course, Thomas Fortune Ryan, who was the Irish Catholic who was wealthier than Rockefeller. And then you have the other wealthy socialite who owned 100 corporations, who was the head of 100 corporations, named Nicholas Brady, who was the most devoted Irish Catholic. And so you have the taking over of the country, the conquered country, by these cartel capitalists who were high-level papal knights and are high-level Freemasons loyal to the Pope of Rome, because they're going to make an empire out of America. They're going to make an empire from sea to shining sea. And so that was the purpose that they engaged in after the war between the states, after the war of northern aggression into the South. Alexander Stevens warned of this, that they would turn the Republic into an empire. Centralism and empire, he warned of this. You have centralism with the 14th Amendment and empire with March 9th, 1933, when the Jesuits would use FDR to impose emergency war powers military government here in District of Columbia in America. But then, after that, they would use this empire, this Holy Roman 14th Amendment, socialist, communist, corporate, fascist, American empire, to wage war around the world for the benefit of the papacy, to impose political leaders, be they tribal chiefs, be they military dictators, be they kings or what have you, with absolute power, to rule the peoples of those nations. And so the military power of the papacy would be exercised out of District of Columbia. So they would build the Pentagon. And the builder of the Pentagon was a man named John McShane, who was a powerful knight of Malta, and he had his massive construction company in Philadelphia. The knights built the Pentagon. And they would use certain of their agents to oversee its building, like Leslie Groves, General Leslie Groves, and others. But in the end, they would have the centralized military power of the world in District of Columbia. This would be financed by the Pope's Federal Reserve Bank. You have 12 branches, you have 12 apostles. You have a particular branch in New York that's the biggest one. That's where they house the gold. Well, the foremost apostle was Peter, because Peter finds a gold coin in the mouth of a fish, and he pays the tax that they are to owe according to the command of the Lord Jesus Christ of the Bible. So this monster, this papal monster in District of Columbia, is an empire that has put everybody in this empire under emergency war powers military government, and deems everyone in this empire U.S. citizen, a U.S. citizen, which is an enemy belligerent, under Trading with the Enemy Act and the Hague Convention, living on their land as enemy land, alien property, and all the states have been reduced to conquered territories. In fact, de facto conquered territories. As of March 9th, 1933. Well, we have World War I, we have World War II. I've preached much about that in the last 10, 12 years. And so we're going to hone in on a particular timeline here where we have, after World War II, after the Pope's Eurasian Jewish Holocaust that killed at least 6.5 million Jews, which was necessary for the papacy to drive the Jews to Israel to establish the nation of Israel. Without the Eurasian Jewish Holocaust, there is no Israel. Who was behind it? It was simply not the Germans, not just the Germans. Loftus, John Loftus, has a great work called The Secret War Against the Jews, where he shows all these different nations involved in working together for the destruction of the Jews. And in my book, Vatican Assassins, I show you that Hitler and Stalin worked together. Hitler and Mussolini worked together. Stalin and FDR and Churchill all worked together. And they all worked together with Hitler. They also worked together with Hirohito in Japan. The Axis and the Allied powers at the top, at the very top, were controlled by intelligence agencies, intelligence communities that at the top worked together. They worked together for the entire duration of World War II. They worked together after World War II. They worked together during the Pope's Cold War that was started by the Pope's Masonic, Freemasonic agent, Winston Churchill. That scumball, along with his brother scumball, Franklin Dandable Roosevelt, both of them Freemasons, along with another scumball, Joseph Stalin, another Freemason. And there's a book written on that they were all three Freemasons, called The Deadly Deception by James Shaw, high-level Freemason. Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt, all at the Yalta, were all Freemasons, working for the Jesuit order and doing what they did. Meanwhile, at this time, we have the OSS under Knight of Malta, Wild Bill Donovan, working with the NKVD. And Donovan even goes to Russia and meets with the head of the NKVD. And so, Russian intelligence and American intelligence, controlled by the Jesuits, work together during World War II. You would expect that, since they're allies, of course. But what you don't know is that Hitler, through Martin Bormann, worked together with Stalin. There's a book called Hitler's Traitor by Kurtzer. Talks about a conspiracy between Hitler and Stalin, that Stalin knew every move that Hitler would make in his attack against the East during Operation Barbarossa. So they worked together. After World War II, the Jesuits, through their certain Freemasons, are going to start the Cold War. This illusion of the Cold War, that the military government of the United States is an enemy of the military government of Russia, USSR, had to be pursued. to give us the idea that we were enemies of Russia and the Russian people were enemies of us. And the fact is, the government of Russia is the enemy of the Russian people. The government of the United States is the enemy of the people of the United States. And later on, when Israel would be founded in, May 14th, 1948, the government of Israel would be the enemy of the people of Israel. That's right. History will bear this out. The government of Israel is the enemy of the people of Israel. Because the papacy runs the government of Israel. And it runs the government of Israel through the CIA. Mossad is run by CIA, not vice versa. The politics of Israel are absolutely controlled by the Vatican through its various Masonic agents, its Jewish Masonic agents. And remember, Jewish Freemasons run Israel for the benefit of the Pope, men like Benjamin Netanyahu and others of the past. This is why the government of Israel will, in 2005, give Gaza to the savage Muslim Arabs in Israel. Because remember, there's no such thing as a Palestinian. This whole Palestinian creation was done by the papacy through their agent Yasser Arafat in 1964. Yasser Arafat had a French Roman Catholic wife. When he died, he had over $1 billion. He was the agent for the papacy to keep the agitation going in Israel, the Arab-Israeli agitation, for the benefit of the papacy. Remember that Shimon Peres and Yasser Arafat had mutual stocks, had stocks in a mutual company called Paltel. I remember when Barry Chambers taught this to me years ago. He's now deceased. And he also wrote a book called Bye Bye Gaza. So when the Freemason Ariel Sharon gave Gaza away to the Muslims, the Muslim Arabs, he committed an act of high treason against the Hebrew, Jewish, Israelitish people of Israel on orders of the Pope, which government of Israel has complete loyalty to. And so, as I've said before, the purpose of the present Gaza war, which is absolutely justified, as the government of Israel told the civilians and people to leave Gaza, and Egypt has blocked their exits so that they can't leave. In addition to the fact you have left-wing communists running the government of Israel who think that the children of the Muslim Arabs are more important than Israeli soldiers, and so you have a high body count by the Israeli soldiers who rightfully have invaded Gaza. And, as I have previously said, all the Arabs need to leave. Gaza belongs to Judah. And if they don't want to leave, well, then they're the enemy and they have to be forcibly removed. And if they're not going to be forcibly removed, they need to be killed. I'll say it. The place needs to be purged. But that place is for the Hebrew, Jewish, Israelitish people, and Arabs have no right to it whatsoever. And there's no such thing as Palestinians. That's a further agitation of the Jesuit papacy. Because remember, the Pope runs this country through the Council on Foreign Relations. The Council on Foreign Relations is in New York. It was founded in 1921. And guess who happened to visit the Council on Foreign Relations? Not only Shimon Peres in the past, but Yasser Arafat. They all work together. They're bed partners. So, it's in this backdrop that I want to teach you a couple of things with regard to the Jonathan Pollard fiasco, the Jonathan Pollard injustice put upon that patriotic American Jew who was sentenced to 30 years in prison wickedly by a Roman Catholic judge, by a Roman, Italian Roman Catholic judge. That judge's name was Aubrey Eugene Robinson, Jr. We'll have more to say about him a little later. The U.S. attorney that was involved in this was an Italian Roman Catholic. Let me see, Judge Aubrey Robinson wasn't Italian, but he was a Roman Catholic. And the judge involved in the U.S. attorney involved in this was, his name was Joseph Di Genova, Italian Roman Catholic, who hated Jews, just like the judge, Robinson, hated Jews. Good Roman Catholics exercising their anti-Jewish fury within a judicial context. What a sin and a crime. But going on, I want to start a little bit of, we'll begin with Jonathan Pollard. We'll begin with Dr. Bob's introduction in the two podcasts that he has, and so I'll just kind of highlight that. This is the podcast of Life Lessons with Dr. Bob, EP45, his podcast. He starts out in giving you the history of Jonathan Pollard. He says that he was arrested in 1985, and he's imprisoned under the Reagan administration. Now, you must remember that Ronald Reagan had several powerful Knights of Malta in his administration. One of them was William J. Casey, who was the head of the CIA, who had been trained, educated by the Jesuits at Fordham University in the Bronx, New York. Hence the Jesuit connection through Casey to the CIA being utterly in the hands of the Company of Jesus. We go on. In 1987, Pollock is convicted for spying for Israel, and he's given life. They give him a 30-year sentence in spite of a plea agreement. There was a plea agreement in place because Pollock, Jonathan Pollard, was not a threat to the security of the United States. You always want to remember that. Israel and the United States governments, both working for the Pope, had an arrangement of exchanging intelligence information for the security of both nations. Jonathan Pollard discovered that the United States government, CFR-controlled government by the Archbishop out of New York City, was not giving Israel necessary security information and serious security information. So essentially, because he was in a place of intelligence, he got that information and gave it to Israel. And he did it as a patriot for Israel as well as for the United States, because the United States government, the military government, had an obligation to give this information to Israel, but it refused to do so because those in the government at the time were creating weakness in Israel in planning for a future war so that it would be weakened, Jews would be killed, but the nation would never be destroyed. See, the Pope likes killing Jews. The doctrine of the papacy hates the Jews. The Jesuits really hate the Jews because the Jews lay claim to Jerusalem and the Jesuits lay claim to it. Remember, Ignatius Loyola went to Jerusalem in 1524 and tried to lay claim to the city, and then he was going to set up his headquarters there for the Jesuit order. Well, the Franciscans sent him home. So, Jonathan Pollard rightfully got this information and conveyed it to the Israeli government. And he was acting under a handler who was connected with Israeli intelligence, very high up in intelligence. And his name was Rafitan. And I have something to tell you about him. Might as well tell you now. Rafitan, involved with Mossad and other high intelligence agencies in Israel, was the one who refused to have the Mossad capture Josef Mengele in Argentina when the Mossad was capturing Adolf Eichmann. This is this guy. The guy who's going to betray Jonathan Pollard is the one who betrays also the people of Israel by not capturing Josef Mengele, that Bavarian Roman Catholic, that man in charge of the selections at Auschwitz. But they will capture Eichmann, who's just a colonel and who's a Lutheran, so we can blame the Eurasian Jewish Holocaust and the mastermind behind it all on a little gimpy German Lutheran and keep the papacy out of the story. Sure, Eichmann was guilty, I have no doubt about that, but he was a colonel. He was not any of these high SS generals. And furthermore, Josef Mengele, who was known as the agent of the Angel of Death at Auschwitz, could have been captured by Mossad. But this Rafutan refused it, gave the order not to capture him. Now, this is the same head of Israeli intelligence that's going to betray Jonathan Pollard. Now, in studying Jesuit history, Jesuit Vatican history, you must always remember this principle. They always have an outward but false policy. And they have a secret but true policy. You must always penetrate this design whenever studying what the Jesuits do or their agents are doing. They've got an outward policy, but it's not their real policy. They have a secret but true policy. That's their real policy. So, we have Jonathan Pollard here, and he is busy getting necessary intelligence information to the Israeli government for the safety of the Israeli people, supposedly. Now remember, this incident happens some 20 years after the USS Liberty attack by the Israeli Navy and the Israeli Air Force. And if you want to see a very definitive work on this, you need to get the 4-DVD set called Sacrificing Liberty. They most assuredly attacked the USS Liberty, and they wanted to sink it, and God prevented it from happening through the prayers of a few people, and particularly a Jew on board the ship who was a Bible believer. Remember, there were Jews on that intelligence ship. And so, this was done on orders of the CIA, overseen by Lyndon Baines Johnson, and Johnson was behind the attack on the USS Liberty, as I've taught you before, because the purpose was to blame the Egyptians for it, so that there could be an invasion of Egypt. The Soviet Union, run by the Jesuits, would then have sent conventional weapons to blow up the Dome of the Rock and the Alaska Mosque in Jerusalem. That would have facilitated the papacy's design to build the Third Hebrew Temple. But all of that was lost. All of that was lost when the USS Liberty didn't sink, and by a miracle of God, a man on the Liberty managed to get a wire out, a telegraph out, a message out to the fleet that was commanded by a traitor who was John McCain Sr. and Admiral Kidd. And the Liberty didn't sink, and it was able to limp back to Malta, 1,000 miles away, where it was repaired. And so all of this is in a documentary called Sacrificing Liberty. You got to watch it. But this was done to create anti-Jewish fury in America also. Because now they can say, well, it's Israel that runs the lobby. Israel runs the AIPAC here, and AIPAC runs this government. This is all propaganda of Roman Catholics, like certain Roman Catholics were brave men, but they were wrong, and that was one of them was the congressman at the time who came out and denounced Israel for running the government. And that's he talked about the government being replaced with a military government. He was a very brilliant man, but he was a Roman Catholic. And so this was James Traficant. Rightly exposed certain Jewish traitors in the government, but those Jewish traitors are working for the Pope. They're working for the Archbishop of New York. Most of them are members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then he blames Israel in general for running the government, when Israel doesn't run this government. The Pope runs this government, and his Jesuits, just as the Pope runs the Israeli government. That's why Mossad, CIA work together. And that also goes for the Arab intelligence communities too. The Pakistani ISI is financed and overseen by the CIA. The reason why you have the Pentagon and NSA in the United States is that is the heart and soul of the Pope's international intelligence community, from which they run all intelligence communities. And don't you think for 1 minute that Snowden is right. Snowden is snowballing you. The Soviet, the Russian FSB, SVR works in conjunction with the FBI, CIA. They work together. They've worked together throughout World War II. They worked together throughout the Cold War. They work together now. And we're played for suckers to think they're enemies. And Jonathan Pollard, unfortunately, was played. He rightfully gets this information out, information that the military government here is supposed to be giving Israel anyway. And so as a result, he's being overseen by his handler, Rafi Eitan, who's a Jewish traitor, who's working for the Pope also, and who's going to cut Pollard loose because he's going to stop the escape plan for Pollard to get out of Washington. He overrules it so Pollard cannot escape. This is what Rafi Eitan did, the wicked Jewish traitor, sinner, betraying his own Hebrew people, Israelitish people, Jewish people in Israel. You ought to forever remember him as a traitor, my Jewish friends. And so now, charges are going to be, he's at the Israeli embassy, he's arrested by the FBI at the Israeli embassy. This is Jonathan Pollard. And he didn't cooperate, he didn't give up any names. And it's about this time in the 1980s, during the Reagan administration, that the real Soviet agent, Aldrich Ames, is busy betraying CIA operatives in Russia. One of them, according to Ames, was fed into an oven feet first as he was burnt alive in front of his wife. That's because of Aldrich Ames, this wicked sinner, working in the CIA, whose father had been in the CIA. The Jesuits were running Ames. And he should have been killed. He should have been executed. Still in prison, the wicked sinner. So Aldrich Ames is a top CIA traitor to us. And at the same time, you got the top FBI traitor, Robert Philip Hansen, giving all sorts of secrets to the Soviets. Robert Philip Hansen is most devoted Roman Catholic, and he's a member of Opus Dei. He's America's greatest, one of the greatest spies in this country. He should have been put to death. So between Ames and Hansen, this is where all the treason is taking place. And before these guys, you have the treason taking place with Angleton and Gallitzin. Angleton is counterintelligence of CIA. He's running Vatican desk, and he's also running the Israeli desk. And you have Anatoly Gallitzin, who's high up officer in the KGB, and they're both working together. I want to read to you from Anthony K. Brown's work, Treason in the Blood, page 555. Again, we read from Anthony K. Brown's work, Treason in the Blood, concerning the Philbys, concerning St. John Philby, who was a high knight of Malta in Great Britain, working with the KGB and British Intelligence, MI6. So we go down here in page 555. Quote, during that time, Angleton, on information supplied by Gallitzin, had been searching for a Soviet spy inside the Soviet division, and he demonstrated his confidence in Gallitzin by making available to him the CIA files on the personnel of the main operating section of the CIA in the Cold War with Russia. The 1,000-odd men and women of the Soviet division. So this filthy James Angleton, Knight of Malta, the ghost, is the one who gives up all the names of CIA operatives who are Russians in the Soviet Union, and they're going to be killed. So what Angleton was in the 1960s and 70s, Ames would be in the 1980s. He just takes over. Ames is also going to be counterintelligence too, just like Angleton. And don't you think for 1 minute the Jesuits are not overseeing the CIA, especially its counterintelligence branch. And by the way, who's a contemporary now at this time of both Angleton and Aldrich Ames? Not a Malta, William J. Casey, who worked in conjunction with the Gambino crime family head. He was also in the military. His name was, yes, it was William J. Casey, not a Malta, head of the CIA, and Albert Vincent Caron, Mafia Don, and also in the American military as a high officer. And when Caron's daughter got married at her wedding, one room was for the CIA and one room was for the Mafia. They're working together. Pablo Escobar, who was running the Medellin cartel, his neighbor was a CIA officer. The Mafia dope runners, in conjunction with the CIA, working together. That's what we hear as we're watching the movie JFK. By Oliver Stone's excellent movie, JFK, the Mafia and the CIA working together. So, we have Angleton here working with Gallitzin. And so we read here. He's given Gallitzin all the information of the high CIA assets in Russia. We go on to read. He settled Gallitzin in an apartment in New York City, where he was permitted to receive and read the files. During this period, perhaps 3 years. 3 years! Angleton given Anatoly Gallitzin all these secret CIA files. Many of the personnel and operational files were delivered to him, and he began to trawl through them, looking for data that corresponded to his notion, obtained through conversations with KGB headquarters in Moscow. Of who Big Mole, quote-unquote, as the suspected agent came to be called, might be. A man with something Russian in his background, quote-unquote, whose KGB code name was Sasha, and whose real name might begin with the letter K. We go on to page 556. But at some stage, it was discovered that there were two KGB officers living in the same Manhattan apartment block as Gallitzin. They were working under the cover of the United Nations and had their families with them. So it is said, as did Gallitzin. When this proximity was discovered, Gallitzin was evacuated suddenly to a farm in upstate New York. The files were sent to him there, but he never returned them. He never returned these CIA files. Nor did anyone else in the CIA, other than a small number of officers in Angleton's counterintelligence division, like Raymond Rocca, another Knight of Malta, working for the Pope, aiding Angleton in their treason to America, became aware before 1974 that Gallitzin was being sent the files or that he kept them. When this was discovered, an operation was undertaken to retrieve them, and according to a senior CIA officer involved, quote, two vans were required to return them to the agency. Two van loads of our most secret files in the possession of a Russian in the boonies somewhere north of Albany. You can imagine what the FBI thought when they were told about what had happened to some of their most secret files. We go on down a little bit farther in a quotation. The one doing the talking here. They're one of the senior CIA officers investigating the many serials, quote-unquote, to Big Mole provided by Gallitzin was Claire Edward Petty, an Oklahoman who had joined SIG in 1966 after working for 8 years with a German organization in Germany working against Russia. An analysis with a, quote, wonderfully clear mind, and quote, according to his chief, he had failed to establish any case for Gallitzin's allegations against the two senior officials of the Soviet division. And as he was to state, he began rethinking Gallitzin's information. I hear this is honest Oklahoman, Claire Edward Petty, a woman. It was at that point that I decided I'd been looking, quote unquote, at the cases, quote, all wrong by assuming Gallitzin was as good as gold, unquote. He went on. This is a man, pardon me, Claire, he's a man. If you turned the flip side of it all, made sense. Gallitzin was sent by the KGB in Philby to exploit Angleton. Then the next step, maybe not just an exploitation, and I had to extend the reasoning to Angleton. Gallitzin might have been dispatched as the perfect man to manipulate Angleton to provide Angleton with material on the basis of which he, Angleton, could penetrate and control other services. Angleton himself must be the traitor, Petty decided. Angleton was a mole, but he needed Gallitzin to have a basis on which to act. No doubt he was. Angleton was the mole in the CIA, and he was the liaison to the KGB. He orchestrated the union between the KGB and the CIA, and to keep the CIA weak, he made sure that certain CIA agents were compromised and killed. Angleton was a traitor. Another dirty, filthy, ungodly, wicked traitor to the American people. Given all of our private records and assets to the Jesuit Order's KGB. Keeping the Russian people down and subjugated and sent off to gulags if they say one wrong word. That's the Jesuit government. Now, I want you to listen as I read from the book The Secret War Against the Jews by John Loftus, who's a Roman Catholic trained by Jesuits at Boston College, but nonetheless he's telling the truth here. When he writes in this work on page 193. So we read, we'll start top midway page 193. Shortly after the Clinton administration took office, remember Bill Clinton was trained by Jesuits at Georgetown. Bill Clinton is a Jesuit of the short robe. Everything he did in his office was done on their order. They told him what to do, like they told Obama what to do, like they tell Clinton or Biden what to do, like they're telling Trump what to do. They run both political parties. And so we read. Shortly after the Clinton administration took office, the intelligence community withdrew its previous objections to publication. In fact, many of the pieces of the jigsaw already had passed into the public domain. In 1982, James Bamford published his seminal history of the NSA, The Puzzle Palace, which disclosed some of the main points of the NSA-GCHQ liaison. The National Archives had been given dozens of declassified FBI documents citing British intelligence as the source of its information on Jews in the United States. And finally, in 1991, a pair of British authors confirmed a portion of the espionage on American Jews. You're right. Sometime in 1945-1946, quotation, a special unit even more secret than the rest of the code-breaking agency was set up to monitor the activities of Israeli agents and their sympathizers in the U.S. and elsewhere. The men who ran this organization held the view that because of the use made by the Israelis of sympathizers from the Jewish community, no Jew, however apparently loyal a U.S. citizen, should be permitted to work in the special unit or even to be told of its existence. All reports from the unit carried the code name GOLD, quote-unquote, signifying that they were not to be shown to anyone of Jewish origin. Quote, we had them cold, unquote, recalls one former intelligence official who was cleared to see the gold reports. Quote, we knew who was shipping the arms, who was paying for them, who was being paid in this country, every illegal thing that was going on in this country. Because of politics, very little was ever done with this intelligence. But so far as I know, the National Security Agency still has a group like that, buried somewhere deep. Unquote. Loftus continues on page 193. It does indeed. Its nickname is the, quote, Jew Room, unquote. Inside the National Security Agency is an intelligence center from which all American Jews are banned, regardless of their proven loyalty or devotion to country, just as the U.S. Navy banned Jews from electronic surveillance ships such as the USS Liberty. Well, that's not true. If you watch the special on Sacrificing Liberty, you will see that there are a couple of Jews, and especially one Jew, who was killed in that attack on the USS Liberty. So he's not quite right, at least on the Liberty. Quote, the Jew room, unquote, is where the United States and Britain spy on Israel and anyone who supports Israel. Its name is a misnomer, as the intelligence center has more than one room in more than one agency. As we shall see in the following chapters, it is and has been the heart of the secret war against the Jews. That's right. NSA, Jew room, the heart of the secret war against the Jews. So now are we going to be surprised when we see Bobby Ray Ingman contribute to the destruction of and betrayal of Jonathan Pollard? So Pollard is arrested now, and Clinton refused to let him go. Why? Because the Jesuits of Georgetown told him so. They're his makers. His favorite professor was Carol Quigley, who wrote Tragedy and Hope out of Georgetown. Clinton was highly connected to the faculty of Georgetown there when he went there. Of course, Bill Clinton is the bastard son of George Herbert Walker Bush, according to a particular CIA agent that I met the acquaintance of in one of my classes. Yeah, he was inside George Bush's house and as a Delta Force protector, and he overheard Bush's wife say to him, well, what are you going to get Bill for his birthday? Barbara asked that question. Well, what are you going to get Bill for his birthday? And Pappy says, well, I don't know. And she said, well, you should. He's your son. That was overheard by Philip Redman, who was a CIA, who was Delta Force guy at the time, later became a CIA agent, Philip Redman. He said that to me in my house. Never forget it. So we go on here, and so Clinton refuses to give up Jonathan Pollard because he's told to do that by the Jesuits. The Jesuits are going to punish this Jew, this no-good, dirty Jew, because Pollard was the one responsible for Interpol boarding a ship full of arms in Thessalonica in Greek, headed for Iran. Over $10 million worth of arms were here, and these were high-tech material, according to Pollard here in this interview. And it was found out when they boarded the ship that it belonged to George Herbert Walker Bush. George Herbert Walker Bush, the vice president at the time under Reagan. Reagan would later be made a Knight of Malta in 1989 at the formal bestowal of that wicked prize to him by J. Peter Grace of the Grace Commission, head of the Knights of Malta in America. So George Herbert Walker Bush is the vice president. He's really the president. I mean, Reagan is not the president. It's George Herbert Walker Bush, just like Biden was the president in Obama's day. And so it's found out that this ship and all these weapons are part of the Iran-Contra affair, overseen by George Herbert Walker Bush and a particular individual in the National Security Council named Colonel Oliver North. Well, you know what they both have in common? They're both are Knights of Malta. George Herbert Walker entertained the head of the Knights of Malta in the White House. It was Andrew Bertie. I have the picture of him sitting with Andrew Bertie, head of the Knights, Grand Master of the Knights of Malta. Spoke 17 languages. The Knights of Malta were busy fomenting the Iran-Contra affair to sell guns to Iran, to then take the money and give it to the Contras in Nicaragua, so that they could kill the Contras. Remember, whatever side this government takes openly is the side that's going to lose. This happened in 1968 in Prague when the intelligence community, CIA, backed their uprising against the Russian occupation there, and they were betrayed. Same thing happened in Budapest, in 1956, The sight of the men of Budapest to rise up against the Soviet occupiers. They were betrayed, captured, some killed, sent some off to the Gulag, all betrayed by the CIA. Because they wanted more Soviet power in Hungary. They wanted more Soviet power in Czechoslovakia. And they wanted more communist power in Nicaragua with Daniel Ortega that the Jesuits had put in power. Which, by the way, just about a year or so ago, he kicked the Jesuits out of Nicaragua. Good for him, Daniel Ortega. Maybe his allegiances are changing. So, Jonathan Pollard's not released. Clinton will not release him. Jonathan Pollard has an attorney who's a friend of the U.S. attorney, who's a friend of the judge, Robinson, and a friend of the U.S. attorney. What's his name again? Friend of U.S. attorney. Yeah, friend of his attorney, Joey DiGenova, Italian Catholic, working for the Pope to make sure that the deal is stopped and that Pollock will go into prison for 30 years. Oh, when those Roman Catholics come to power, they're so wonderfully wonderful in their tyranny and their conspiracies. They're just magnificent when they're all working together. The judge, U.S. attorney, Pollock's attorney, he's a Lebanese Roman Catholic. He had everything against him. And then after Pollock is convicted at the trial, as they're taking him away, he yells to his attorney, "Appeal! File for an appeal!" Now, appeal's a one piece of paper. It's a page. You just notice of appeal. It's real easy. His attorney refused to file the appeal. That was deliberate. He didn't forget. So now we have the treason of his Israeli handler, Rafi Tan, doesn't allow him to get away if he wanted to. The escape route is stopped. And Rafi Tan is the same one who allows Mengele to escape in 1959, captured by Mossad. So he's betrayed by one of the head leaders of the intelligence in Israel. He's betrayed by his lawyer. He's betrayed by the U.S. attorney because they engaged in a deal. And now they decide they're not going to hold to the deal. He's betrayed on all these fronts. This is called the octopus, the Jesuit octopus. Its arms are everywhere. Its head is in Rome. And so we go on. Meanwhile, they have arrested Aldrich Ames. They're going to arrest him later. Ames is at his highlight of betraying the American people, giving all these secrets on the CIA to the Soviets so they can kill their Soviet CIA, Soviet agents inside Russia, USSR. Robert Philip Hansen the same way. Both immoral, wicked men. Now, Pollard mentions two very evil men that wanted him dead, wanted him off in prison. The first one was Caspar Weinberger, and the second was Bobby Ray Inman. Now, these two conspirators we need to spend a little time on. So, first, Caspar Weinberger. Caspar Weinberger was what? The Secretary of Defense under Reagan. Caspar Weinberger is a Masonic Jew. Caspar Weinberger is a member of the Archbishop of New York's Council on Foreign Relations. Caspar Weinberger was very high up in Bechtel Corporation, founded by the Jesuits in San Francisco, later moved to Virginia. Caspar Weinberger is a man of power, subject to the Jesuit order. And Bobby Ray Inman. Bobby Ray Inman was in all the intelligence communities. He was DIA for a while, CIA, he was NSA. Bobby Ray Inman was also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's still alive, too, by the way. And he is one of the leading men of Eric Prince's Blackwater, which is now what, Z, which was changed to the name of Academia or Academa or something like that. Bobby Ray Inman's a knight. He's another papal knight. So you have these two wicked sinners, Weinberger and Inman, betraying Jonathan Pollard, making sure he goes to prison. And these guys are both serving the Pope. Two more traitors to him. Caspar Weinberger. So again, you have the Iran-Contra affair, and the purpose was to get guns or finance the Contras. And also at this time, the CIA is busy running cocaine into the major black communities, Ricky Ross and Los Angeles. You can read all about that in the book Dark Alliance, written by Gary Webb. And so the CIA is busy destroying the black communities in California, later on in other states, and using the money that they're making to finance the Contras. And this is the whole theme of Gary Webb's book, Dark Alliance, for which he would be shot in the back of the head twice, and it would be ruled a suicide. When you resist these sinners, they're serving the Pope, you better be saved, you better know the Lord, you better be washed in the blood of the Lamb, you better, having believed the gospel, that Christ died for your sins, buried, and rose again, you need the protection of the power of the Holy Spirit, because you're going to be dealing with Satan and highly demon-possessed men who want to kill you, who want to remove you from the Lord's flat earth and further strengthen the devil's kingdom that he has here. So, what we have is the Contras lose, as they're supposed to. And so those patriotic men of Nicaragua are all killed. And so it furthers the dictatorship of Daniel Noriega, who is working for the Jesuits and their liberation theology. So we got a little farther here. And Jonathan Pollard, though, never talked. He never betrayed his American patriots, the nationals that helped him. And so he never talked, and he never was a rat. And all he's guilty of is getting the intelligence that rightfully belonged to Israel, as through the agreement of Israel and the U.S. government, to give to them. He's only guilty of rightfully getting that to them. But oh no, they're gonna make him this horrible, terrible traitor. And again, as I said, his lawyer never filed an appeal. So let's just take a look at all the people that have betrayed him so far. We got the betrayal by Caspar Weinberger, Bobby Ray Inman, General Rafitan, his Israeli handler. We have the betrayal of Bill Clinton. And then we're going to see the betrayal of Wolf Blitzer. That another CFR Jew working for the Pope. Wolf Blitzer is going to publish a interview that he had with Jonathan Pollard a few days before Jonathan Pollard sentenced, and Pollard said many more things in that interview that was agreed upon to be released after sentencing. So Wolf Blitzer betrays Jonathan Pollard. That punk, that evil, wicked Masonic Jew serving the Pope of Rome with the network, what is it, MSNBC, is that the network that Wolf Blitzer's on? Busy being the papal slave that he is, the little Jewish coward betraying the people in Israel. What's going on? So that's another traitor for Jonathan Pollard. And again, you want to remember at this time, William J. Casey is the head of the CIA. He's probably the most powerful knight of Malta in the Reagan administration. He's facilitating the arrest, the betrayal, the imprisonment of Jonathan Pollard. And William J. Casey is a Knight of Malta, Roman Catholic, trained by the Jesuits at Fordham. And you Jews better wake up to this, because they're getting ready to create anti-Jewish fury in this country like there never has been over this Gaza war that has so many lies of all the people that have been killed by the Israelis. And it's all their fault, and they're leveling Gaza. What a terrible war crime that is. Hey, that's not according to the facts. But they're, with their academia and with their leftist communist universities here, they're creating anti-Jewish fury over this Gaza war. And this is going to justify the roundup of the Jews in this country to send them to camps when the new right comes to power. And in the meantime, to call for certain Jews that are able to get out of here and go back to Israel, as one of my previous broadcast shows, that America's doomtown for the Jews. The Jesuits run it. Wherever they go, they persecute the Jews. That's who ran the SS. Those stupid Germans at the top didn't run the SS. It was high Jesuit coadjutors like Himmler and Heinrich Mueller and Karl Wolff and those other high men of the SS that were persecuting the Jews on behalf of the Jesuits. Walter Schellenberg, head of the SD of the SS, Roman Catholic, has an audience with the Pope, what, in 1952, shortly before he dies, carrying out the doctrines of the papacy, which is the Eurasian Jewish Holocaust, aided by Joseph Stalin. Stalin and Hitler worked together to that end. So, continuing on here. So, Jonathan Pollard goes to prison. For a few years, he goes to a maximum security prison. He's about 450 feet underground with nothing, nothing to communicate. He goes ultimately to jail for 30 years. He comes out. His wife had passed away, I believe. Died of cancer. Loved his wife dearly, Esther. And while he was in prison, he was the only Jew there among 5,000 prisoners. Until Bernie Madoff showed up. And Madoff hated Jonathan Pollard. And Madoff is the one who was responsible for that Ponzi scheme that deprived the Jews of America of some $60 million. Stole it from them. Weakened the American Jews here of America. Yeah, Madoff is responsible for the loss of some $50 billion. The judge, the court, ordered him for restitution for $170 billion. And who does he take money from? Why? The Securities and Exchange Commission just keep letting him do what he's doing. Who's running Securities and Exchange? Why, the Jesuits? And so they want him to bilk as much money as possible out of primarily the Jews. That was his purpose. He was connected to the Jesuits out of Fairfield University in Connecticut. But we'll never talk about the Jesuit connection to Bernie Madoff now, will we? No, he's just a terrible Jew. He did it all by himself. No, he's Jesuit connected. So you got these two Jews in prison together. Madoff hated Pollard. Because Pollard was an honest man and Madoff was a crook. So what happens is ultimately Jonathan Pollard gets out of prison and he will go to Israel, and there he lives in Israel today. I want to give you a couple more facts on Bobby Ray Inman, one of the men who helped get Pollard sentenced and set off to jail for life. Here's Bobby Ray Inman. Of course, he is another papal knight. He was in the Office of Naval Intelligence. He was in the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was in the CIA. And he denied the claim of Israel that the attack on Liberty was a mistake, and of course it was no mistake. He's right about that. But Bobby Ray Inman never went in and properly blamed LBJ for it. Yeah, and Francis Cardinal Spellman, who oversaw it all in 1967. This is before Spellman dies, a few months later. Can't bring Francis Cardinal Spellman into the attack on Liberty now, can we? We're just going to blame Israel and going to blame the Jews. But we won't blame LBJ for it. She's the one that gives the order to sink that GD ship. I want that GD ship at the bottom of the Mediterranean. Bobby Ray Inman also went on to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank in Dallas, Texas in 1987 to 1990. And he's on the board of directors of the Council on Foreign Relations, Dell Computer, and he's also on the board of directors for Blackwater, which is now Academii, with Eric Prince. Yeah, Bobby Ray Inman. He was in the CIA during William J. Casey's reign of when he was in the CIA from 1981 to 1987. Weinberger, pro-Saudi Arabia, pro-Wahhabi. The open but false policy is to back Israel. Secret but true policy is to oppose it and finance its Arab Muslim enemies. so that there can be a war that Israel will win and have more borders and be even larger, because the power of the holy people will be broken in the 70th week of Daniel. And so therefore it has to greatly increase, and it will be increased after this Middle Eastern war that's being planned and facilitated by initially Sharon's gift of Gaza to the Muslims so that they could begin this whole horrible war controlling both sides. Rafi Eitan, he refused to capture Mengele, as I mentioned. While capturing Eichmann, the Lutheran, Mengele was a Bavarian Roman Catholic. They used to call Mengele Father Mengele when he went to university. 2018, Rafi Eitan backed the new right rising in Germany, which is kind of like a new neo-Nazi party. Rafi Eitan backs it. Because the protector of Israel will be a united Europe one of these days, when America falls away after its persecution of the Jews. Mention Wolf Blitzer. Here's another betrayal. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she betrays Pollard by saying at the committee, there's three on the committee, she's a Jew and there's another Jew there, and it's 2-1, that she since says that he was not sentenced properly, but whenever justice opposes procedure, why, procedure must reign. That's what this little Jewess did. His Counts on Foreign Relation member did to Jonathan Pollard. So, in conclusion, just want you to see all these traitors involved in betraying Jonathan Pollard, sending him to jail for 30 years. But God delivered him, got him out of there. And he tells a quite compelling story in this interview with Dr. Bob that you must listen to. And I just thought I'd put in my 2 cents to show that the real culprits behind this were the Jesuits and their papal court Jews and their secret society Gentiles working all together for the Black Pope in Rome at Borgo Santo Spirito number 5 and what they did to Jonathan Pollard. So my prayer is that the Lord would vindicate him, and that the people would wake up here to see that it's the Society of Jesus that runs this military government since March 9th, 1933. It is no friend of the Jews in Israel, but it is a friend of the government of Israel. That's why they work together in the attempted sinking of the USS Liberty. That's why they work together in the betrayal of Jonathan Pollard. In conclusion, thank you for tuning in today. I have a book, Vatican Assassins, One in the House of My Friends. Please go to my website, vaticanassassins.org. I have a book there. You can get ebook, Vatican Assassins. I think it's for like $35. It's a disc, or you can download it. Also go to my 24/7 World Radio site, and there you can purchase some of my broadcasts for the last 10 to 12, 11 years and other things. And lastly, please pray for me 2 minutes a day if you know the Lord. If you don't know the Lord, it's time to know the Lord, because we're running out of time here. I believe the Lord is going to come any moment for his church, for the body of Christ, and this time of grace will be ended, and it will go into ultimately the 70th week of Daniel, when the final Pope of Rome signs an agreement with many nations to protect Jerusalem. And then the clock will begin to tick, according to Daniel 9:27. So, appreciate your prayers 2 minutes a day. Lift up holy hands without wrath and doubting. Pray that you'll spend time in the Word of God, the English Bible for English-speaking people, the AV 1611 in its present edition of 1769. And may the Lord bless you on this Lord's Day. I know it's Memorial Day, and I want to preach a message against Memorial Day. Hopefully I can do it today also, but I'm not sure if I will be able to. But I wanted to get the truth out on Jonathan Pollard, the racial Hebrew-Jewish Israelite, who was betrayed by this Jesuit-ruled emergency war powers military government controlling the government of Israel, that also betrayed him too. So until next time, Lord bless. Maranatha.